Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about solar radiation, a podcast, as you can hear, while driving. So hopefully, I'm just adjusting the mirrors here, because my daughter's just driven the car previously. Be able to stitch this together while driving. You'll hear some driving noises. And what's stimulated me to write about or talk about this is that it's a sunny Saturday morning in Australia, AFL grand final day. So it's a big sort of festive day right throughout Australia, I think. This is the end of the footy season, depending on what sort of code you go. Suggesting with him, and I've got to go and do some errands where importantly my son's doing his HSC exam, and so I'm buying some toner cartridge for him down in Penrith. It's a major thing, but it's a very sunny day, and I thought I'd start off talking about sunshine. And this starts in the center of our star. So look, the aim of this is cognitive rehab, just to recall facts. So our star is 152 billion kilometers away. Is that correct? No, million kilometers away. Oh, I'm really, really off. Work that out. Is it 152 billion or 152 million? It's 1.23 million kilometres across the width of it, and roughly 1 degrees distance. I think it's a million kilometres. Oh, yeah, they, like the. The moon is less than a million kilometres away. The moon is 400,000 kilometres. Yeah, so it's 153 million kilometres away, not billion kilometres away. And so it's roughly, the sun's roughly spherical, and the inner really centre of the sun reaches above the magic 15 million degrees Kelvin. So a degrees Kelvin is the same as a degrees Celsius, except it starts zero at absolute zero rather than minus 273. It's a science term for temperature. And at these temperatures, the hydrogen in the sun hits each other, hits together to form deuterium. So it forms basically helium 2 instantly, but when it comes together sufficiently over a long, long period of time, it will form deuterium. And this is a sort of a fundamental aspect of it, in that the energy from the collision will be such that a proton can turn into a neutron by the weak nuclear force, with the production of a positron, and which is an antiparticle, and a electron neutrino. So that's a neutrino which has been brought about. So this is a phantom particle that very few people know about. Now, this means that this process, which is producing the heat inside the center of the sun, is producing, for every watt of heat, there are thousands upon thousands of neutrinos produced. And these stream out of the sun. And we've been watching them for a while. And when I grew up, there was this problem. That's when I was a boy. When I was a boy, they said, oh, What's bugging you? And most people would say around the house, around the place. Women in child labour, people drowning, people fighting in combat, fighting fires. What's the major problem here, mate? Oh, it's the neutrino problems. There's not enough neutrinos coming out of the sun. And it took for a while. I thought this would be a non... an insoluble thing. I'll be able to talk all about neutrinos. There you go, man. So let's go back into, before we talk about neutrinos, talk about when we talk helium gas and hydrogen gas, and when we talk about that, we talk about the chemical. I mean, it was really chemical in that the electron is captured within the local electric field of the proton or helium nucleus. And a helium nucleus consists of two protons, two neutrons. They're called hadrons, and they're heavier composite fundamental particles. They're actually made of quarks, and they're held together by a colour force or strong nuclear force. Let's watch what I'm doing here. I really think I want to do here. Too far. So the aim of the game is these components, when they're really hot, the electron, which is sort of like a golf ball sitting in a golf hole, or a ball bearing in a bowl, it's no longer confined to there. It's really zipping around the place. I don't know. It's sort of like you can imagine electrons as Cheerios in your bowl, and people thump the table enough and it all spreads everywhere. It's just a mess. The sun's a total mess. Now, the strange thing is that the big thing, the big things are electrons, and the small things are protons and neutrons. This is contrary to what... Now, you have to understand this for sunshine, okay? The sun is bulky, and the earth is bulky, because the electrons are bulky. Get that into your head? So it's like a beanbag. A beanbag is a bulky thing. It doesn't weigh a lot, because it's mostly fluffy balls. And so this is why the sun is as big as it is. It's mostly fluffy balls. And the balls, pretty much the size of the sun, can't compress. That will hold it up. And because the balls are held up, the actual little particles are suspended within those balls. So it's like adding some to a beanbag. It's not quite the size. Sort of a fine pepper would be the mass inside of it. And so basically, if you had a beanbag weighing, a kilogram. Imagine a beanbag. Imagine you could sprinkle in some pepper. So it's the pepper, number of pepper particles equal to the number of particles inside. And that magic pepper weighed over 999 kilograms. I just have to get my memory right. I think the mass of a electron is 1,230 times lighter than so in equivalent, the that little little salt thing, little burst of salt to scale, which is blown into your beanbag, would weigh the weight of a car. So just to give you an idea how much more mass and protons and neutrons are compared to electrons. And because they're so massive and they're so small, they're incredibly dense. So you can imagine, I have a beanbag which is fluffy, weighs a kilogram, and I have this pepper which weighs the weight of a car, and I blow it in. And that's what's happened here. Now, what happens is that there is a generalized force which, are several things which keep this at this overall size. Now, one is the peppers repel each other, and the peppers really try and form a crystal, if you like, keeping an equal space between those electrons. So this is why you've got the bulk. This is bulky things, and you may ask yourself, why come people haven't explained this to us? And I will tell you, it is a massive, massive anti-quantum mechanics conspiracy theorem set up by the Danes. Have you ever not trusted the Danish people? They're untrustworthy, and the Danes, Niels Bohr, in his Copenhagen school, spread this guff that electrons are much smaller than protons. And then you got this big beanbag, and you're saying, look, I've got this little puff of pepper, which is protons. What's the other stuff? The electrons are even smaller. So what's in there? It's empty space, mate. Which is complete rot. So people would tell you that the sun is mostly empty space. Probably rubbish. Okay, and as we say, these protons are all positively charged. And because they're positively charged, they repel each other. And but the neutrons, which can actually stick to them, so they stick to each other by something called strong nuclear force. And the sticking is so intense. That's sort of like an unimaginably big. I'll just watch what's going on here. And it's actually bloody hot. It's 8:30 in the bloody morning. And it's bloody hot. Oh, Christ. Yep, so we're going along here. Yeah, that's the story here. So what's happening in the sun is that there is this process, this huge pressure, and over millions of years, the sun is effectively, it's a huge, massive compost heap. It's putting out as much energy per kilogram as a compost heap. So if you've ever seen compost heap, I've seen compost heaps in piles of grass or stuff like that in the morning, when the heat and moisture is coming up, you can see heat rising up and the moisture rising up out of the compost heap. And so the sun is slowly stitching together these protons, and in the process making a few neutrons. So well, what's it doing? It's stitching together protons, sticking them together, and then binding, in effect binding electrons in them. So it's sucking out electrons from the sun and making eventually helium, which is two protons and two neutrons. Just come on here, watch this person coming out here. And so that's the process called nuclear fusion. So the sun is making helium. And you say, well, if it's making helium, how come it's not getting more heliumish? Well, the thing is that that question is not a stupid question. If it's making helium, I'm feeling sunshine because it's actually in the process of making helium. Where is all that helium going? Well, the answer is that the helium is going into the centre of the sun. And so it's like this car, fantastic car with a huge amount of gravity in it, and it can actually store its own energy. Now, gosh, I'm absolutely dying here. It's so hot here. Now, I'm going to turn off here, my friends. It's quite complicated traffic conditions here. Yep, turning in, and I'll buy this thing. Thanks a lot so far for listening. Back again doing a podcast. I'm now moving out of this office work, so I had a experience. So I'll continue talking about the origin of stuff, the origin of sunlight, basically. You know, this is a very hot day. Let's increase the air conditioning around here. It's 9 o'clock in the morning, so it's actually getting quite hot, and it's still last Saturday in September, and I had to go in, buy some toner cartridge, bought some cheap cartridge, quarter of the price of a genuine product, and lasted no time whatsoever. Sort of just had a suggestion of toner inside it. And so it was quite interesting. I had to go online, as you do, to check the price match it. Of course, this Office Works has a good $10 cheaper than anything else. So that sort of can do that. Telling you what their overall price is, so it's rather kills the fun of all the little groups here. Then I went online to actually check my podcasts and the apps that I place with it, and I was, you know, I've got sort of fairly an i5 computer with a sort of grindingly slow internet, and this laptop, the only laptop you could buy is i7. I hope that one wasn't beeping at me for some reason. i7, and it was just blindingly fast. It was just a real joy. So I'm sort of working with extremely slow machines, and the idea, just to make sure, is that I'm sort of calculating ahead to get things up to speed, or not. You know, if they're not going too fast, I'm sort of working out what's going on, make sure these people don't, you know, get run over. Yeah, so I'll go back and start to talk about the sun and the solar system. And it's, when you start to talk about it, you realise that the information that people are loaded up with, so it's going to be quite a pretty place when they get, this is in Penrith, they've got just buckets of, I can't quite describe what's going on. There's been roughly 30 years of road work as each council's putting a new thing with Penrith, but I think it's going to be a nice shady boulevard after all this. It's the central part of Penrith. So Penrith has got, Penrith is the main sort of sub-city down from the mountains. And there's actually three Penriths, old, in a line, sort of like the archaeological dig of Penrith. You dig, hey, there's nothing underneath it, because the actual older cities are in a line. It's sort of like a mall where Penrith has sort of developed in a strip, so you can get different ages. There's an arcade area of Penrith, so you can actually go back into the 1960s, these pokey arcades. I sort of love them, and of course the people with me go, no, don't go there, don't go to the $2 shops, don't go to the this, and there's all these impossibly possible businesses which are dying. Now, of course, then there's these horrible 70s buildings, and they've all been gutted out, and it's all turning over. A reasonably prosperous place, and I think it's going to take up again because there's just a huge population explosion as they're building huge amounts of cheap housing around here. Of course, housing is appallingly expensive in Sydney, Australia. I think it's the most expensive city in the whole world. Like, if you want to go to New York, it's cheaper to live in New York or to buy a house in New York or Paris or London. It's cheaper places to be than put things out. And of course, thank goodness the house, I mean, not it's unfortunate that we've paid off our house, but the house prices have gone up by a factor of easily 10 in 20 years. It's just huge, huge profit circles. Now I'm going to go back. I've got a series of short things that I will give you a talk about. Oops, making sure I don't crash into this guy. I'll give you a talk about sun and space. But the important thing here is that there are people who are really enthusiastic showmen, the world's greatest showmen, to speak about it. But when they come down to it, they're basing their stuff on erroneous fundamental science. How much more fundamental than what things are? You know, this in the sun is this process which is generating heat. And the very first steps into the room, you're telling people, it's almost like you're directing people to look away from the stage, look away from the stage, look away from reality, and really they're looking at shadows, sort of like Plato's, so it's, you know, Plato's parable of the shadows, cave and shadows. There is this reality here of quantum physics. And things coming together, and there's a few paradoxes which I'll put up to you. Thanks a lot for listening. So there's a little errand. Okay, back again, and I suppose this is one of the beauties of a podcast as you're shopping, driving and shopping. So I went for this particular errand. I can't tell you too much about it, but it was finding a shop in one of these, well, 1970s arcades. You know, what had happened is that all the doors had failed. You had to come in through a side door, and there was inside was stuck all these shoppers, people who were just pleasantly happy. We hadn't been to anything, so we liked being in the 1960s and 70s, and I let them out through a chemist and came back. And the shop that I was interested in isn't open, or was directed to, isn't open on a Saturday. So there you go with it. Now, one of the things is that it allows you to stop, which you have to stop from time to time. Doing a podcast, oh, sunshine, I'll talk about sunshine. Going across, talk about the sun, I'll try and get to it too. And then I realise, oh, well, look, poor blighters here. I've just got to focus here so I don't crash into any cars coming along here or if there's a car coming behind here. Yeah, it's this fundamental thing of this image that people are given, that most of matter is indeed empty space. And there's so much evidence that it's not, partly because the sun's as big as it is and the earth's big as it is, and there is something holding things apart, and that is these bulky electrons, making sure I don't get killed. Oh yes, excellent. These bulky electrons. And as you're talking, one of the important things is that they say, look, these tiny little protons, they don't like each other. They've got a really strong force pushing themselves away, so you have to, it's sort of like trying to two repulsive ball bearings together, and the harder you squeeze them more, they flip out of your hands. It's sort of like, say a couple really hate each other, and you put them on increasingly romantic dates, and they sort of split apart. So they're reasonably okay if they're in the same social event, but if you push them together, they really push each other apart. Now, this would be hard. This is sort of hard to understand in the Copenhagen school. That, how hard you push an electron and a proton, you can't get them to stick together and make a neutron. It's just impossible. Even these things are absolutely damn, you know, you get infinite. In fact, you'll get enough energy to make a big bang, obviously, if you, you know, one on zero is the infinite. It's an infinite amount of energy if you actually were able to put the electron and a neutron. Electron, which is this smaller than a neutron, or an electron smaller than a proton together. Okay, I'm just going to have to watch this around here. Sorry, I've got to, try and not get killed while podcasting. That would be a good idea. It's sort of, it's not just smart wrong, it's offensive wrong, this electron being smaller than a proton. The sun's going to massive amounts of time. It's taking billions of years, like 10 billion years on average, to stick a hydrogen, two protons together. It's taking 10 billion years together, but it's going to take even longer for it to stick an electron to a proton. And of course, electrons do merge with protons, but through something else, not geometric space. You've got to really get your mind around this, so we'll be finishing this pretty soon. So I'll come around here. I'm off here to do some shopping and also put off some library books as we go around. Now that looks remarkably full for the summer morning, but it's okay. The story is that it is actually a bloody full car park. But all this stuff, oh, there's stuff way up over here. Wait for you to learn in person not to just smash me up. The thing is that the electron and the proton exists in different, well, why not call it dimensions of space? Why not? We do call it different dimensions of space. One's in the lepton dimension, the other's in the hadron dimension. They actually slide through each other. They're cohabiting in our same space, but our space is sort of like an overlap. So these particles overlap because space is overlapping. And that when you've got a hydrogen atom, you've got this phenomena of the proton existing within the electron, through the electron, not on top, but in a completely different universe. So it's almost, imagine, like a graphics layer where you add one layer over top of the other. The two layers don't intermix. They're tagged to each other, they feel a force between each other, but the two things don't intermix. So this is, no matter how hard the sun pushes, it cannot push an electron into a proton, except when it pushes really, really hard and it makes a neutron star. It then collapses right down. It says, bugger this, I'm going to make a neutron star or a white dwarf compressed degenerate matter. So that's degenerate matter is not happening. At Copenhagen School is not happening. Quantum mechanics reigns supreme, and it's a long, long process, billions of years for it to burn. So if the sun's a gas bottle, the gas bottle takes about 10 billion years, 5 billion, what is it? The sun is 5 billion years old, and it will, so the Earth's 4.5 billion years old, and will It's a mid-age for a son. It's not too small and not too big. I think we've got a Goldilocks son. Quite a nice son overall. Quite an interesting son. I'll get back to talking about that when I come back. Back again. I've just completed that part of the shop in a modern, well, you know, 2000-ish shopping centre. There's a 2005 shopping centre added onto it. But, you know, it took typically ages to just buy some milk and some mints. Gonna look after our kids, make sure this, come on, Chappy Maddie. Okay, okay, we're around here. Okay. Make sure I don't run this person over. I'm still got to go take things up to an op shop and buy fruit and veggies and all that type of stuff. I suppose one of the strange, the weirdest things I've ever encountered is people's logic with sticking to an outdated group of concepts like the atom and the nucleus and the electron. Their outdated thing is it's just like the everyday stuff that they experience. It's not everyday. So there's this wishing that it's as it's been taught to them when they were kids. So the wishing it's a bit too confrontational. So let's see how I'm going to do this. Moldora. So I've got to make a decision here. Whether I take a sort of country route or go through this bustling metropolis, which means traffic jams. Slightly far. I'll just go through the country route. Route home. So we're unpacking it. We've got the fundamental majesty and process of our sun is based on lack of quantum degeneracy, that the electrons the bulk of electron repulsion against electrons is holding up their whole bulk, and so if electrons if the electrons shrunk, could I shrink electrons by a factor of 100? I can. Alright, I'll tell you how I can do it. And would the particles shrink? Yes, they would shrink by a factor of 100. The density of the sun would be incredibly small if we could shrink electrons. Okay? Now I'm going to give that proposition to you. Because there is such a thing as the tau electron. So, is it an electron? Well, no, it is a tau. It's actually been folded through lepton space to have a greater lepton number. Tau, and I think it's is it a muon or the really, really think is it the muon? Probably the muon. I think it's the mu. Oh gosh, I really think. I think it goes electron, the muon, and the tau electron, which is super heavy, unimaginably heavy. The heavier these things are, the smaller they are. And you can actually make an atom incredibly small. And make a molecule so small that actually fusion occurs. They're so small that the nuclei can actually bind together. And I have to go back. So this is true. And what I'm really trying to get into here, and this is perhaps a benefit. See, I'm crossing the Nepean River on a classic old bridge. As I come up here. Sorry about this. Is that, what is it? Is it me or is it you? I don't mean you as my podcast listeners, because I really don't know how you think, but you as in terms of 99% of the people I encounter are very aggressive, and they have this really stuffed way of thinking, and you can tell it's because they use it to explain how you think. So they, for instance, they will say, you're just researching, or you're just thinking the way you are, so you can be famous and get power. You know, you can be disruptive. No, I'm just thinking because this is what the textbooks are, this is what quantum mechanics says, this is the logic, this is the math of it. Really, it's, you know, society is irrelevant, and that's sort of like the most inflaming thing you could possibly say. How dare you say society is irrelevant? But what people have done is they have taught, here's a piece of information, here's how it's relevant to society, and if you believe it, you can use it properly. They give information as tools to people rather than just dissociated information. And so what they are questioning is not whether something's true or not true or understandable or not. They can't understand it because that's been denied them because they've been told guff, right? This is that the electron's smaller than the proton and that the atom is mostly empty space. They've been told guff, and their response is to silence you, edit it out. And what is happening is that this is how prejudice goes forward, by editing people out, and editing out a person's a social thing. And to quote Voltaire said something like, a fool or a tyrant is someone who uses prejudice for reason. And really, when you actually start to speak with people, you get this prejudice. You know, I'm just really trying to think, the model of the sun, which I'm giving you, which is correct, which is the quantum mechanical model of the sun, which is electrons bigger than protons, and the protons sitting in a soup and coming together very rarely, and by the weak force being converted into a neutron and birthing an electron. That electron can't... One of the most interesting things is, what is electron capture? I find that something really hard to understand. And look, electron capture would be something that's comprehensible nowadays. It's sort of like a fly landing in a fly track. You know, what is that electron capture? I quite, when you actually get the full quantum mechanical picture and you're looking at the diagrams, you know, what is electron capture? How can that possibly work? Because all reactions can actually be time reversed. That is, you can just run them backwards, and an antiparticle is a time reversed normal particle. That really, it really goes so profoundly into the vector, the matrix representation of the particle, and the Feynman diagrams, which of course I'll get back to look at. So this is sort of a rather strange thing. It's in terms of I don't know. Can you imagine everyone on the main highway of knowledge, going through the knowledge, and you've just quietly been selected by various reasons to go bush, right? And you sort of learn to live by your wits, bushcraft, which is probably a bit of maths and computing, to go bush in terms of atomic and nuclear theory, and to have a, you know, I don't know, people with real good bushcraft have a variety of navigation techniques, and they use it for different occasions. So I sort of think the different nuclear potential models are different navigation techniques, and the one that really works for me is the 1950s Saxon Woods. Is that right? Saxon Woods model. That's just pure quantum mechanics. I really like it. It just speaks to me. It doesn't have zeros or complexities. It's not unoffensive. But for me, it's a navigation technique. Now, what's happened is that, boomf, I've been medevaced away off. You know, the choppers have come in, Med backed me out of research and science and stuff like that, which is happens from time to time, and put your backy on, and you wake up, and you're in a tour bus of people nattering away, saying, that forest over there, that's impenetrable. No one's ever been there. No one understands it. And you go, hey, excuse me. You know, there are other things to consider. And then if you go back into this, the fact that people don't actually have genuine knowledge, they have social knowledge. That is, information bound to behavior norms. Now, the behavior norms, it's sort of a two-way street. So I didn't believe I'd be speaking, I'd be talking about something, I'm talking about people, but really we are talking about it. Yeah, that is, a behavior norm is that, it's not very far from me attributing a behavior to someone, then giving myself license to behave in a different compensatory way. So, i.e., you analyze someone or something, group of thoughts, with a non-conforming behavior, and that justifies you to engage in another behavior, extreme. Probably you may have a limit of acceptable behavior, which you've dictated yourself, you know, and that limit can actually drift if you surround yourself with people who can drift. And before long, you're addressing a simple piece of mathematics with culture, history, power, position, everything else except the bloody little incy-wincy bit of thing. Can you do a Fourier integral? No, you can't. You can't go. It's sort of like this game, and you can't get to the next level. You can actually get read everything you want. You can get as much points as you want, but there's certain points you need to get to the next level. You may be very frustrated. You may decide that you deserve to win because society, I am powerful in society, and I'm using my social power to get understanding. This is my certain thing. I didn't think I'd be speaking like this, but just really trying to understand this. And we have got the sun where it is, as big as it is, taking as long to operate, doing what it does, and this process. And going into it, there's something I thought I wanted to get into this time, is talk about the different processes of four protons making a helium. That is, a proton must stick to another proton, turn into a neutron, and that has to happen twice, so you get two protons, two neutrons, and make a helium. And in this process, an enormous amount of energy is released, and it's sort of an interesting thing to see how it's done, because it's not as easy as you think. If something bounces together, it can also bounce apart. It has to bounce together, and rather than bounce straight apart again, it's actually got to release electromagnetic radiation. It's actually got to go in, strangely enough, in a strange symmetry, which is the wrong symmetry, and symmetry coming out of it is producing light. And even that is, you can't access with the simple, salt and pepper on a table, moving those around together. You can't say, look, these things come together, and they twist, and there's a dipole transition moment. And this is one of the most astounding things, something so tiny having a dipole transition moment like that. So they produce gamma rays, they produce, I suppose, a form of kinetic energy, and there's all this type of stuff. The understanding of it. Now, the other thing is that if this isn't hard enough, I have to remember to get up off here. Oh no, I have to go up to the next centre. Absolutely mauled if I went home, having forgot to do task and one. Oh, poor little chap, sorry, I didn't see you. I really didn't see you. So there's a thing that, and the BMW behind me is doing the correct thing. There's this little turn off from the, what I should say, is an appallingly bad taste visitor centre, which is built. I've driven up to Glenbrook. It's appalling bad taste visitor centre. If it is, if it's not, has a sandstone that looks like a bad 1960s toilet block. So, you know, that off-grey concrete bricks, you know, those big bricks that they used to make toilet blocks, and I just disgustingly, it looks a disgusting place. So I'm going up to the centre here. So yeah, we are discussing this, but this is, you know, I feel sunshine, you feel sunshine. I don't know, for you, you're probably up in Northern Hemisphere disaster area, but two little chimps can feel sunshine, and people have had a whole series of different experiences. They felt just the warmth, they felt security, dryness, safety, then they've thought religious thoughts, and then they've thought social thoughts, and all these things. I can't describe it. But there is a new generation of thought that you can have. I'm having a new generation of thought about it. Really getting into the photons coming out of the sun and the actual quantum mechanics of the sun coming across. And it's not really in-your-face quantum mechanics. It's only in-your-face because the other belief of the other beliefs people have are just so whack. Now, going back historically, the ancient Egyptians believed that the sun was a giant scarab going across, and this is a dung beetle rolling a dung ball. Now, obviously, looking up, you can't actually see this type of stuff. So there's so much complexity. Now, the sun itself, we now think it's huge, but back then, the sun, looking around, is the size of a pebble. It's the size of a piece of dung going across, and it's, you know, that distance size. But there was a belief here, and if you said something else, you would, in the ancient Egyptian society, in general, you'd be, all right, just go off, build that pyramid. You, my friend, you've said it's a scallop, you can be a priest, and here's a bit of land for you, and you're supporting the system, we'll put you forward here. And so this very much archaic view of the sun is currency, social currency, back then, and now there's a social currency now, where people use it as an excuse to be confronted by their own behaviour with it, and then triggered. There's no point feeling bad about the thing unless that triggers, in terms of a model, you've got to trigger conforming behaviour. Conforming behaviour is just not something which is just there. It's learnt and practiced, and people have a behaviour of conforming themselves and of making other people conform. That's really essential, and so when you really come to think of it, one doesn't have to actually teach people quantum mechanics or teach people the right thing. You have to teach them first to unlock themselves from these belief systems. Okay, I'm just going to look up here and see if I have to leave you here, and this will be the most garbled or perhaps the most inspired podcast you've heard. I'm sorry about this, but this is my life. Your life will probably be like this, interspaced with bits and pieces. You've got to live your life amongst shopping and paying bills. Thanks a lot for listening. The final chapter of this rather ramshackle podcast, as I go around doing various bits of shopping. I did a narrow escape. I've been trying to put off this, I shouldn't call them junk, but a series of things which we wouldn't throw out, but give it an op shop. And I'm sure, just looking at it, as soon as they get it, they'll throw it out. That looks like a few old gents from the RSL. Come on. So various op shops have been closed on a Saturday. Staff by volunteers, and Saturday morning they're volunteering to do other things I would expect. But St. Vinny's was open, and I got in the front door and smiled at the lady, and she said, "You're not bringing that back in. Is there any electrical thing? Is it clean?" And I said, "Look, I don't think there's electrical stuff in here. I do think it's clean." Well, of course, it's been sitting on our deck, not being able to get into op shops for a while, so getting a layer of grime on it, but I didn't say that. I said, "Oh, look, you know what? This is my favourite shop. I love op shops because, you know, everything you're going to buy is a mistake, but it's an inexpensive mistake." And there was just that immediate joy that the actual concept of an op shop as a non-commercial entity was understood. But that being said, let's understand a bit more deeply about the sun and the real issue with the sun. So the sun shines, and it shines quantum mechanics into our lives. However, there is a darkness of a non-quantum mechanical view in people's lives, and that view is in the face of deep evidence that what I believe is incorrect. And anyone to sort of a view that is contrary to what we want, or logic, we tend to say prejudice, and prejudice held by a group of people consistently is conditioned. And I think that's the real issue. When the sun shines, it shines on quantum physicists in a different way to the way that it shines on the rest of the population. But what it shows, when you look at the rest of the population, you can see conditioning, and it is robust conditioning. That is, conditioning which is insensitive to further inquiry or analysis or the ways of quantum mechanics. There is this conditioning going across. So if you see the sun, Schrodinger's wave equation, with enough years of education, you move away from the idea that atoms are mostly empty space, and the Bohr theory and all that. Even though that if you keep on surfing, skimming on the surface and read a history of time, or listen to various people, you know, pop people say that they are soothing. They're sort of like the lyre music as you're going through mental mummification. I think people, although they see themselves as glorious consumers, are really sort of terrifying mummies of mummified ideas. Now, one of the things is that we can make a few inferences, or a few conjectures, speculations, and try out. The thing is that for a conditioned belief, they will have, along with that, a series of ways of interacting with the world which preserves their belief. This is what I stand for. I stand for this. How can that possibly be so? I mean, that's just, that clearly doesn't make sense to me, as it is. Money doesn't make sense, ownership doesn't make sense to me, and also standing for beliefs, and eventually people will die for causes, the most bizarre thing you can possibly get your mind around. So, I'm coming home really soon. So, it's conditioning. Now, conditioning, there's almost a differential equation that the more pressure you put to actually push against at a top level, to push against conditioning, the more people fight back. They're conditioned to be conditioned. This is one of the great things of education, is conditioning to be conditioned. It's the most amazing thing to see. Now, then of course, it's not that you will have a battery of techniques. One is obviously to challenge so that they know, that people can know that there's alternatives. It's sort of like, it's an environment. If people hide and actually don't say, look, there's an alternative view of things, so this is it. No, it's actually your duty to, as a quantum physicist, to explain how things are. But, which is one thing, but there is another set of tactics to go through. And this is given as I sort of begin to understand that there's knowledge, information, and behavior form a triumvirate, which tends to be gives consistent behavior in the face of inconsistent knowledge and inconsistent information. That's the beautiful, beautiful thing to say. So what can you do? So you can say possibly phase one is to state an alternative viewpoint. Stage two is to listen and then draw attentions away from a battle of viewpoints, because we know underneath it that the existing viewpoint will prevail, because it's prevailed Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, whatever, all the way through last week and last month. Consistent views have always gone ahead, and there's been an emergence, being an inductive view, that I've always held consistent views, therefore I'll continue doing it. It's served me well, and I've been able to hose down other people who have objected to it. This behaviour stuff. So rather than do that, you say, how did you arrive, how have we arrived at this situation? That is, I have this view and you have that view. How's it gone? Or to a certain extent, how have you arrived at your view? You're more expert at that. And then, what is the consequence of you, believing your particular thing in the particular way that you do? And you cannot challenge it. You can just say, well, it's significant that if your awareness of the consequence is a significant factor. I think that is so. And therefore you leave it. And that person who's got various reasons for believing the sun, electrons are smaller, the sun is mostly empty space, whatever it is, the earth is mostly, everything is mostly empty space. if they believe it, and they really need to believe it, it's a discussion of their need and alternatives. So the warfare has taken off, and we're going forward with a different belief system. Now, I've just come full circle. I'm actually back in front of my house, and I tried to talk about the sun, got a bit diverted. Thanks for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.